am not. I am not. Spiral blam. Not a problem. We'll wait for you, love. Okay. I know that feeling. I'm usually up sometimes. Yeah. So it's like usually like 1 or 2 in the morning. I'm like, I guess I should probably go to bed. And then I gotta get up at 6 o'clock because life goes on. But it's a little challenging.
Good morning. Welcome to church this morning. My name is not Spiral Blanton. I'm Phil Embry. I've been a member here for about 2 weeks now. In the pulpit this morning, we have Dr. Robin Berkley, who is an associate professor at SIUE and the co-chair of the Food Ministries. You are invited to stay following this worship for fellowship, conversation, and refreshments in our refreshment hall, fellowship hall, the Kate Worker Room, just through these doors behind me. If you are a newcomer here this morning, we extend to you a special welcome and hope that if this is your first time to visit, you'll consider entering your name on one of the visitor cards that can be found in the back of your hymnal and placing the card in the offering plate or handing it to an usher. If you'll do that, we'll send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about all the programs and activities going on here at the church. If you're visiting for the first time here and have children with you, we don't see any first-time children. Okay. Well, we do have professionally staffed nursery for infants and young children. If you would like to learn more about the church and about Unitarian Universalism, please visit the information displays in our fellowship hall just on the opposite side of this wall behind me. There are pamphlets, newsletters, and other visitor information that you're certainly welcome to take home with you. I now invite you to turn to your neighbors and greet them, especially the ones you don't know yet, and I will greet you. If you have a short announcement for the good of the church, please come to the microphone.
It's roller derby up here. Watch out. Good morning, everybody. I'm Sarah Lazars. I don't have my name tag, sorry. I am I don't know what the title is, outreach ministry coordinator, whatever. So that means when nobody wants to do social justice stuff, I do it. So I went to a planning meeting yesterday for the Pride Parade with the other UU churches. We do have a spot for all four churches in the parade. So that is thanks to Lauren, I forget her last name, from Emerson. She's the point person for all of our congregations on that. If you are interested in participating in any way, shape, or form in Pride, the worship service beforehand, the parade, or you want to drive your car in the parade, please come and see me so that you can get more information, or just show up that morning and we'll find you. But we have lots and lots going on that day. Oh, yeah, that's probably a good idea. Pride is on the 29th of June. The worship service will be at First Church St. Louis. I don't know what time the service is. They didn't tell me that. The parade's at 11 o'clock, though. So, but if you want more information, come and talk to me. Thanks.
Hello, I'm Juliette Cronwillis, and today I am wearing my Camp Fest hat. So for those of you who don't know, every year for the past 4 years, we have had a week-long camp out at the group camps at Pere Marquette. It's a beautiful facility. There are cabins and a pool, and it's very lovely. This year, it's between, I think, 30th to the 4th, although we're encouraging people to come like the, I don't know, 1st through the 4th, because the 30th will be a little funky. Anyway, this afternoon after service, we're going to have a planning meeting. You don't need to come to the meeting if you'd just like to come to Camp Fest. Come and talk to me, and I'd be happy to talk to you about how Camp Fest works. But if you're a planning person, I hope you can meet with us afterwards.
Hi, everybody. I'm Sabrina. And the day before Pride, the 28th of June, we're going to be hosting our fourth Saturday lunch, as usual. And I'm here to solicit donations of personal care items, of which we have none at all. What's maybe a little bit of toilet paper, but we need all kinds of personal care items like shampoo, toothpaste, toothbrushes, deodorant, well, you name it. Imagine if you were less fortunate what you would be needing that you can't get on food stamps, and that's what we require. And we want to thank you for all the help you always give, but that's a few weeks away. I just wanted to put it in the minds of people because I don't want to do it the week before is all. Thank you.
Let me just add on the fourth Saturday thing. Kathleen and I, you and I need to talk menu, and we'll need food obviously donated for that. So we'll get the word out as soon as we get that coordinated. So.
I am Lee. This coming Saturday, we'll have a work day, and we're going to try and paint the Emerson place. I need volunteers. Remember, Emerson only has 3 walls. So it won't be too long for us to paint. And so please let me know if you can be there, because Sandy has volunteered to provide lunch for us. So work, eat, good thing. My second announcement is on Friday night, we had a farewell party for Cleaver and Linda. And I want to thank my committee for all of the great work that they did. And that was Robin, Sarah, Spiral, Nancy, Peg, Mary, Jerry, Char, Jamie, and Sarah. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. We couldn't have done it without all of your help. And thank you all for participating in the service as well.
Hi, I'm Mona Hebert. Again, I'm going to ask for your generosity, as I have in the past. I'm going on my medical mission trip to Guatemala again this year, and my husband, Paul, is coming with me. So, anyways, I'm not going to interfere with the fourth Saturday luncheon, so I'm not going to ask for toothpaste, toothbrushes, or soap this year. You can keep all that, okay? But we will be spending 2 days at an orphanage in Casa Guatemala, And we are asking for donations of new or gently used socks, t-shirts, and shorts for the children. They have about 200 children that live in the orphanage. They're not all orphans. A lot of times, if the family can't afford to send the kids to school, then they will send them to the orphanage, because the orphanage will provide free schooling for them. But they do need socks, especially so that we have another organization that does the shoes, but shoes and socks prevents them from getting the cuts on their feet, and unfortunately, because of the high incidence of unsafe water, there's a lot of parasites down there, and that's how it gets into the body. So we're asking for socks and t-shirts and shorts, okay? And I'll be sending out a thing to Becky to send out to you, and also I'm going to send out a link to the organization that provides well water, that provides water filters for the villages so that they can get safe drinking water. So any contributions of money for the water project or socks, t-shirts, and shorts for young kids, I'd appreciate. Paul and I will be leaving the first week of August. So, and I have him to help me carry everything. Thanks.
I now invite you to move to the microphone and share briefly any gratitude or celebrations that you may bring with you to church this morning. Notice that there will be time to share concerns and sorrows in a few moments.
After the service today, please feel welcome to celebrate with Lee and I in regards to marriage equality this past Monday. Kleber was able to be there with us in Jersey County to celebrate that awesome experience. So we want to celebrate today to having cake. So it says celebrate with us. Please do.
And I just want to add a great joy. I just saw Lily Tade walk in here and try to do it so secretly so everybody turn around and say hi to Lily.
I invite you to move to the microphone now and share briefly any sorrows or concerns that you bring with you to church this morning. It's good not to have sorrows and concerns. May the gratitude and celebrations among us this day become a blessing to all. And may the concerns and sorrows of each be carried in all our hearts, a burden shared become a load lightened. The prelude begins our worship as Garrett Kinder lights our chalice. Rachel. Our call to worship is number 419 in the Gray Hymnal, attributed to Kalidasa. Look to this day, for it is life, the very life of life. In its brief course lie all the verities and realities of your existence, the bliss of growth, the glory of action, the splendor of beauty. For yesterday is but a dream, and tomorrow is only a vision. But today, well lived, makes every yesterday a dream of happiness, and every tomorrow a vision of hope. Look well, therefore, to this day. Our first hymn, I'm sorry, is number 21 in the gray hymnal, number 21, For the Beauty of the Earth. Please join now in responsive reading number 557, found in the black back of your hymnal. It is also projected on the wall behind me. All living substance, all substance of energy, being, and purpose are united and share the same destiny.
All people, those we love and those we know not of, are united and share the same destiny.
Birth to death, we share this unity with the sun, earth,
our brothers and sisters, strangers,
flowers of the field, snowflakes, volcanoes, and moonbeams.
Birth, life, death, unknown, known, unknown.
Our destiny, from unknown to unknown.
May we have the faith to accept this mystery and build upon its everlasting truth.
Through every
Please be seated. We have been greatly blessed. Now let us give generously so that others may be blessed by the work of the church. This morning's offering will now be given and received. Receive with gratitude all generous gifts of time, talent, and treasure, and together we bless them and those who give in faith, hope, and love. Amen.
Thank you, Phil. Morning, everybody. I'm Robin. And I guess most of you know that, but for those of you that don't, my name is Robin Berkeley, and I've been a member of this church for over 4 years, and happily sit here today in front of you to talk about some things that I think are really important. This church, as many of you know, and for those of you that don't know, we're going through a lot of change, and change is scary. So instead of focusing on the sort of the negative side of things, as you will hear in a few moments in my sermon, I want to talk about tools that we can use to really help us to move through and to be the best that we can be, both personally and collectively as a congregation. So I picked a reading today. I was trying to get something kind of philosophical, and then I was reading sort of a testimony from someone who had gone through an enormous amount of change and needed to learn how to let go of control and to be very present with the uncertainty in her life. And I thought that that might be a great way to start, to have us thinking about it, and then we'll deal with our sermon as we get to that in a few moments. So it's called Letting Go of Control and Being Present with Uncertainty by Lauren Stahl. And she starts with a quote from Tony Robbins. The quality of your life is in direct proportion to the amount of uncertainty you can comfortably deal with. She goes on from this point. I didn't want to believe that uncertainty would be a part of my life. I wanted control. I wanted to know exactly what was going to happen next, and I didn't. I was stuck at a job that was unfulfilling. I had no real romantic connection, and I worried about what would happen if I came out as a gay woman. I was living a very unmanageable life, and I was spiritually and emotionally bankrupt. There was a big piece of me that did not believe I was good enough, that constantly wanted more, that strived for perfection. I developed a need for control to avoid these painful thoughts and feelings. It distracted me from the pursuit of perfection and my unrelenting standards. I didn't like the unknown. That brought about fear, and my autopilot was to disconnect from fear. I couldn't comfortably deal with any uncertainty, and the way this manifested for me was quite destructive. I disconnected from the moment through addictions. My addictions provided a distorted relief so that I didn't have to deal with living life on life's terms. I was scared to show my authentic self. I lived so far removed from my truth and my core that connecting with it seemed foreign and frightening. My addictions constantly wanted more and kept me in a cycle of destruction. The thought of being present in my life scared me, I did not think the quality of my life could improve. I was stuck in a tunnel vision where my identity was my addictions, and they were destroying me slowly but surely. I am grateful to have awakened in my life. I remember being in a taxi cab in New York City, shaking. I had been out late the night before. I was in a constant cycle of engaging in my addictions, and my body couldn't handle it anymore. It was then that I realized that my addictions wanted to see me dead, but I did not want to see me dead. I knew another way of living was possible, so I started to let go of these destructive coping mechanisms. I went away to treatment and, for the first time, let help in. I surrendered, and I knew I could not do it alone anymore. And with this came some fear, some uncertainty, the unknown. And all of these feelings and realities that for so long kept me paralyzed, I had to now truly face my feelings and the present as myself for the first time. I realize that it's a choice to stay paralyzed and stuck, a choice that I have all the power and control over. I soon started to sit with these uncomfortable feelings, and guess what? I was okay. I learned that feelings are a part of life and fall on a spectrum day in and day out. I could survive any feeling that life threw my way. The illusion of control is what hurt me. Resisting my feelings and my true self is what hurt me. It is by allowing myself to sit with myself that true strength comes in. I am connected to love. So here is the advice I have for any of you that may be battling addiction or just having a hard time dealing with uncertainty and the unknown. Number one, trust yourself. Two words that have a lot of meaning. You are stronger, more powerful, and more resilient than you think. All that you need is directly there inside of you in infinite proportions. You have the ability to sit with and conquer whatever life throws your way. The more you give that power to another person, place, or thing, the more you lose yourself. You don't need to do that anymore. Number two, let it go. I tried to control everything for so long. I manipulated and came up with a story after story to get my way. My family and friends saw me when I wanted to see them. My relationships were about what I could get from the other person, what void in me they could fill. When I learned that freedom, the freedom that comes with surrendering and letting go, I watched in astonishment as things started to fall into place. Letting go means accepting whatever life throws your way and knowing you don't need to act on impulsivity or fear or insecurity. It means allowing reality to set in and knowing that in the end, you're gonna be okay. Number three, focus on the present. The present moment is a gift. It is all we have. This moment is everything. The more I focus on the present, the more I can tap into gratitude and peace. I spent years unable to accept the truth about the present moment. I didn't think I was strong or good enough to handle it. The worries about the future take me out of the present as well. I have to let it go. I can't obsess about all that I want to do and accomplish or be dependent on the life I see myself in a year or 5 years or 10 years from now. All I have is now, this moment, and it is my duty to be the best version of myself in this moment. Each moment is an opportunity for growth. You are okay in this moment. That is all that matters. The more you focus on this, the more the fears subside, and you can be the person you were put here to be. Number four, and the last point, take it all in. There's no need to rush through life. We only have one life to live. Take your time, slow down, enjoy the little things. Take longer showers. Smile at a stranger. Practice affirmations in front of a mirror, but be true to yourself. The more you get in touch with yourself, the more connected you become, and the more connected you become, the more the quality of your life enhances. Okay, that ends the reading. So join me in prayer and meditation. God of many names, bless our congregation and the people in it as they face personal and collective change in their lives. Help them to walk through the difficult times with conviction. Wash them clean as they walk through the waterfalls of change and into the sunshine of new life and new adventures, adjusting to the new normal. For all those who suffer both publicly and in private, we pray for them to have peace and rest in their struggles. Now take a moment for silent meditation. Thank you for your moment of silence. So the next song that I want to do is actually a video from a group called the Wailing Jennies. I wish I could sing this song, but I can't. So I'm going to share it with you. It's actually a very simple song, and please join in as you're able to. The song is called One Voice. First time I actually got the technology to do what I wanted it to do. Yahoo! All right. I hope that we can revisit this song in the future, and if there's some beautiful people out there who have amazing voices better than mine that are willing to sing in harmony, I think that would be just really wonderful. Anyway, on to the sermon. A few months ago, those of us who were regularly participate as lay leaders were asked to select our summer dates to lead the summer service, and I thought I was being incredibly clever. I chose the first service of the summer and figured, my summer will be nice and flexible, and ha! Kleber decides he's going to leave, and instead of feeling this light airiness in my choice to lead today's service, I feel kind of an awesome responsibility that comes with being the first person to lead after his official tenure here. And I decided to take that challenge on and help us move into the right path as we journey ahead for the first time in over 10 years without Kleber piloting the boat.
So the sermon I initially had in mind had to be shelved for a later time. You'll get it later. And I shifted gears to address an issue I thought was timely, but not a topic that would lay heavy on people. I mean, having to say goodbye to someone who means so much to us is tough, but goodbyes are an important part of life. Instead of focusing on the tough side of goodbyes, I wanted to address the concept of change, how change is essential in our lives, and walking through change to the other side is essential if we want to continue to grow as individuals and as a congregation. So, let me be clear up front, I hate change. More accurately, I hate being changed. And I mean, it's okay if things change around me. I mean, if you change and you change and that changes, not a problem. I can deal with that because it doesn't affect me. But, you know, it does. And most people feel the same way I do. I think probably all of us in here feel like, wow, you know, I don't want to be changed. I kind of like things the way they are. It's comfortable. And I get that. And that's really what the research shows, right? People, I mean, this is what I do for a living, right? This is what people do. They're okay if you change, but not so much if I change. Change, change management, uncertainty, ambiguity, all of these are issues that I try to teach my students at SIUE, whether they're undergrads or grads. how do we deal with change? How do we manage it the best way we can? How do we make decisions when there's so little information on which we can depend? What if it all looks like chaos? And how do we make sense of it all? A video I use with my students is called Did You Know? It's about 3 to 4 minutes long, and it hammers the audience with this high-intensity music and these fantastic statistics about the rate at which things are changing in the world, rapid changes that we can't even begin to comprehend at a speed that almost makes what we know obsolete as soon as we learn it. It's a bit sensational in its delivery, but it makes the point that things change fast, and it'll only get faster, so we might as well sit back and enjoy the ride. Now, I think I've related this to you before in a previous sermon, but I regularly tell my students that there are 3 life maxims, 2 of which I borrowed from Ben Franklin. 3 things in life that we can be certain of: death, taxes, and that things are absolutely going to change no matter how we slice it. We can't avoid it. Things change around us. We can either embrace that change, though, or be left behind. Buddhists have a unique perspective on this issue of change. Buddhists understand that when we desire something we cannot have, or we hold on to the past, we face certain suffering, and it is suffering that creates pain for all of us in all our lives. In this way, I would personally argue, in my opinion, our human suffering creates a sense of hell here on earth. Hell really isn't out there, but really is here as we resist change or hold on to things that are largely transient in our lives. When we accept change, when we let go, we can find peace in our minds and our hearts and can be open to the new opportunities that await us. And we heard that in our reading. Let me share a personal example. And I know I've told many of you this story about a past girlfriend that had her stroke and ended our relationship. It was really a watershed moment for me in practicing my Buddhist faith. When she had this stroke, I spent time with her while she was healing, and I thought, geez, you know, life is going to be fine, we're going to rebuild, it'll be different, but I think that'll be okay. But while she was in the midst of rehab, I had a return here. I was just starting my job at SIUE, and there's no way I could miss the first day of class. There was just no way that could happen. So 2 days after I returned, she called me to say she needed space, that she didn't want me to call her or write her or make plans to visit her, and I couldn't call her family or be in contact with anyone about her condition. They wouldn't tell me. She said she'd call me in a month, and we'll see what happens. And to this day, I still don't know why she decided to do that, but I respected her wishes, and I basically sat on my hands for about a month. Painful doesn't touch it, but my goal here isn't to sort of replay that pain. Really, it's to share that moment that changed how I saw the world. And during that month, I prayed. I prayed for her. I prayed for our relationship. I prayed that she returned to me and that we can continue to build the life we had begun to build. Even if those plans looked different, I was ready. I bargained. I wanted her back in my life, and that's all I could hold on to. And the more I held on to it, the more I created more and more pain in myself. I lost 40 pounds in a month. I had a life coach who was working with me just to eat something each day so I wouldn't end up in the hospital. But my life coach was also a dedicated Buddhist, and she worked hard to keep me buoyed and connected to my core values. That, of course, was harder for me than trying to shove a random bagel or bite of a hot dog into my mouth to keep me nourished. And given I had already lost 40 pounds and simply couldn't eat or keep food down, you can imagine how much harder it was for me to actually think about what it meant to be a practicing Buddhist, which is what I wanted, but I struggled. Each day, she reminded me that holding on to and praying for what I wanted wasn't the solution to my pain, that the pain would still be there. It would still hold on to me like the tentacles of an octopus trying to drown me in my sorrows. I couldn't imagine change. I couldn't imagine life without her. I couldn't envision a new normal because I had just moved to Illinois and had walked away from everything familiar in order to build a life, a different life here. I just wasn't ready to accept that everything we had shared, everything we had wanted with and for each other was now gone. So my daily pain continued until I found myself one day in the shower getting ready for work, and I suddenly burst into tears. And my prayer changed without warning. I no longer prayed for what I wanted, but I prayed for acceptance, and I prayed for her happiness and well-being, and most of all, I prayed for her to release me from the pain and to just let me go so I could move on with my life. In that moment, I could feel the knot untangle in my stomach, my shoulders felt looser, my head felt lighter, and I finally understood what my coach had been telling me for the previous month, that pain comes with attachment to something I could not have. And resisting that pain would only continue to proliferate my pain. Only when I stood outside the situation and accepted the change would I be able to feel the relief I so greatly desired. She only called me just a few days after that to permanently end the relationship, and with great relief, I move forward to rebuild my life. And I still don't like change, but I get it in a deeper and more profound way than I ever did before. I have a few friends who've gone through similar challenges, and the metaphor I like to use is that of walking through a waterfall. And imagine, if you will, you're sitting behind the waterfall on a narrow precipice looking out at a beautiful vista. You're protected behind the waterfall, but you're also isolated, and you really can't move from that narrow precipice except to move forward through the torrential downpour of the waterfall that will pelt you with an unimaginable force. You know the feeling, I'm sure. You think about the lazy river at Six Flags, Hurricane Harbor, or raging rivers, right? Any other kind of water park. You're peacefully floating along the river, and then you encounter one of those horrendous man-made waterfalls that they use to kind of cool you off and to move that river along, and you've seen all the teens that they're battling each other to try to keep you underneath the waterfalls, and they want you to be pelted by this, right? So I floated there in my own volition, crazy as that is. It's exhilarating, right? But it's also painful if you're not prepared for that pelting, and it takes your breath away. You feel battered and you feel tossed about. Now, if you can imagine magnifying that maybe 100 times, like walking through Niagara Falls, you can kind of get a sense of what we're talking about. It's gonna hurt, but just like feeling any real change can hurt, but a step at a time, if you're willing to endure that discomfort that comes with the journey, the rewards on the other side of the waterfall, on the other side of the pain, is really beyond measure. So where am I leading you? The Buddhist tradition uses labyrinths to do walking meditation, and these intricate twists and turns, moving within, then returning to the outside again, are all part of the means by which we journey to our core to discover ourselves, and we recognize that change is inevitable. The process of walking and breathing and meditating activates our own ability to walk through change and to deal with whatever crises we are facing. This process is centuries old and can serve us well if we're facing personal or professional challenges, or even facing the emotional challenge of seeing a beloved minister move on to a new congregation. Change can feel like a burden or something to be feared, but it is also an amazing opportunity. If you remember one of Kleber's sermons from a few months ago, conservatives have closed personalities. They don't like change and they want to preserve the status quo. Liberals have open personalities. They like change, and they want to have new and exciting experiences. And while I'm not necessarily advocating that we see chaos, but dang it, people, we're liberals. Come on. Here, by and large, that's who we are. We embrace a liberal revolutionary theology. So change should not be scary as much as it is a wonderful opportunity. Even if we kind of like the way things were, it's okay to say that. But it's also okay to say, it's time, it's good, let's go. If we always cling to the things that have always been done, newer and potentially better opportunities will go by unnoticed. They'll slip through our fingers before we can even recognize that they are there. If we are busy fighting the change and resisting it with all of our might, we won't see the new possibilities and we'll just find ourselves spiraling deeper into despair. The changes we face here as a congregation may feel daunting, but it is truly a great opportunity to learn more about ourselves individually and as a congregation collectively. We need to know more about who we are, what we want, and then we need to breathe and let the process unfold before us. Reverend Wolf will be our guide, but your role is to truly help us find out what we want and what we want to accomplish. We need to all walk together on this journey, breathing, meditating, processing, and as the Wailing Jenny said, one people, one voice. This is our greatest opportunity to exercise our voice and to shape the future of First UU. We've had an amazing journey with Kleber and Linda, and we have built an amazing special place where love and justice abound. But people come and go, and we have a strong foundation on which to build First UU and continue to grow and embrace our mission. Friday night, as I sat and listened to everyone speak from their hearts, it became abundantly clear that we have succeeded in the first crucial step of change management. We have a solid organizational culture that's going to sustain us even when our strong and beloved leader steps away. To make a business analogy, because I'm a business professor, I have to do that. Southwest Airlines was the dream of Herb Kelleher. He made that organization what it is today. When he retired, critics assumed that what made Southwest great was Herb. Herb was great, but what made Southwest really great was the people who worked in it and embodied the values of their founder. They internalized those values and continued to personify them even after Herb had long since retired. Does that mean that Southwest is the same company it was at its founding? Oh gosh, no. It's certainly evolved. We don't have to tote our luggage from gate to gate. For those of you that maybe remember the early days of Southwest Airlines, you had to pick up your luggage and move them to the next one, you changed flights. That's all gone, yay. They're also flying to international locations, which is something they swore they would never do. And now they're growing at a faster rate than ever before, which is also another thing that they had not traditionally done. They are still one of the best airlines to fly and one of the best companies to work for because their core values and company culture are solid. We are solid and we are strong. And if you don't believe that, you should have been here Friday night. It was the most amazing experience, and despite the tears and the challenges, I wouldn't change a thing. So walk through the change, walk through the challenges, and I know that what we will have on the other side of this is a reward beyond imagination. We just have to be mindful and resist the desire to hold on to what was and recognize that new opportunities are there if we are quiet enough to hear them. So what does this mean for us? Number one, breathe. When you feel the fears and worries bubble up in you, use your breath and keep you centered. So everybody, close your eyes. Deep breath, inhale. And exhale, let it go, okay? Number two, use your voice. This is our time to decide what we want, how we want it, and when we want it. Everyone's voice matters, everyone's. You'll be asked by many of our lay leadership to voice your opinion. Do it, because it matters. When you wanna say, no way, is number three. Stop and ask yourself, am I saying no because I'm scared or I'm being cranky and ornery, or am I saying no because it truly doesn't feel like the right path for us? If you stop and wait and listen to your body and listen to your heart, it will guide you. But don't be afraid to say no if it feels right. And lastly, have fun and learn something. Right? Let's practice what we preach. This is a congregation founded on love and connection and compassion, and the energy that connects all of us will truly guide us. But remember, when Reverend Wolf arrives, we'll have to find a way to bring her, even if just temporarily, into that energetic circle. And believe me, the energy flow is a strong one, so I would like everybody to hold hands, if you can. Connect with the people next to you. All right? In front of you, behind you, it's all good. Just hold hands. Okay. Feel that energy, my friends. This is going to sustain us, and we have to allow that energy to flow to those who are new and those who are here to guide us on our journey. And if we hold back or use it in a way that is dysfunctional, this could also hurt us. So be mindful of how we use this energy. It is precious, and it needs to be tended carefully. Okay? So remember, we are one people, and this is one voice. All right. Amen. All right. Thank you. Please stand for our benediction. Oh, well, you can sit if you want to. Huh? Oh, I was going to wait as a closing hymn. We go. Let me finish the benediction, and then we'll do the closing hymn. Sorry. Can you guys handle one more Blue Boat home? Okay. I know. I planned it before I knew we were going to do it Friday night, so I couldn't change it because Rachel already learned the music, so... All right, so we'll do the benediction, and then we'll end with our lovely Blue Boat home. Go in peace. Hold in your heart the certainty that the Spirit of life is with you always. When your heart is torn asunder, or when you soar with sweet joy, you are never alone, never apart. From the Spirit that resides within us, that guides our lives and cherishes us always, take comfort. Blessed be. Have a wonderful day. Wonderful, blessed week, my friends. So we will finish with Blue Boat Home. Thanks, Rachel. And thank you for your patience on the Blue Boat. Thank you. Have a great week, folks. And please, let's celebrate Lee and Shar's 32-year engagement.